This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Dynamic banter. Mike and Steve are gonna do bits and have some fun. Dynamic banter. Honking horns and ringing bells and making good. Dynamic banter. Don't forget the history road. On Dynamic banter.
Hey guys, welcome to Dynamic Banter. Mike said something really funny.
Pete Best, you could stay in the band if we renamed it to the Offbeatles. Pete Best, star drummer for the Can't Keep a Beatles.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. We're talking about the Beatles. Last episode, we talked a lot about the Beatles. And, you know, people can't help talking about the Beatles because, well, they're incredible. They're an incredible band and they're incredible boys and they've touched so many lives and they made incredible music. And so, you know, whatever, dude, Mike and I love them. They have a special place in our hearts. My mom actually sent me a text. She said, don't bother coming even after you get the vaccine. But before she said that.
I would love to know. I have one follow-up question only.
Okay, but hold off until I tell her what she said about the Beatles. She said, I loved the dynamic banter I listened to today, mijo. She's so fucking cute. You guys feel a need for so many, mijo, to make us laugh and think of other things in life. And then she said, I remember that I was 12 years old when the Beatles came into my life. This is like my mom's history, bro.
Yes.
No, spam. There's a spam call calling me. Let me answer it. Hello?
What if that person just hung up and quit their job?
This is very important, and it's about your safety. Like, what if it was a safety recall on my car or something? She said she remembers when she was 12 years old when the Beatles came into her life. She said, first time I saw them was on the Ed Sullivan show. I saved up to buy their first album. I loved it. I wore it out playing it over and over. My crush was Paul McCartney.
Ooh, right back at you, dude. Stella, I'm amazed at the way you love your time.
Skadoo-doo-doo-doo. She said, yes, the sad eyes got me. I call them sleepy eyes.
I always look like I got off the wrong train stop.
Ooh, I'm just a puppy. I don't know where to go.
Somebody turned a puppy into an H&M model and gave him an accent. And that's me.
She said, my favorite song is Imagine by John Lennon. Definitely great song. She said, but pretty much love all their songs. Thanks for the fun music-filled memory. Love you for always. Mijo, I want our lives back. Miss you. It's very sad at the end there. But of course,
dude,
we'll get it
what
back.
An honor it is to have her listen to the podcast and enjoy the podcast.
I know. It's concerning in some ways because of what we talk about sometimes. But, you know, she's my mom. She saw all my bits and she was around for all the terrible shit. And she stuck it out and she freaking pushed me out one day in 1982 in early June. And, you know, ain't nothing she's never seen or heard come from this boy that would shock her at all, I don't think.
Dude, our parents are great and we're very lucky. And
100%.
And that's a 100%. And also, it must be weird to hear their children talk about something that was really popular when they were teenagers. And I wonder if they're listening and being like, what do you know about?
Yeah, listen to these damn kids. Alana talks about her mom's boyfriend who, like, sometimes gives her a lot of shit about liking the Beatles. Like, he's one of those guys that's like, when you say you like the Beatles, they go like, wait, what? What?
You know, you're a girl.
Yeah.
They almost exclusively wrote songs targeted towards women, but you're a girl.
Right. They transcend pop culture in a way that will outlast even the biggest things that I feel like are the most important things in my life. But you know who the Beatles are? The most popular band on the planet?
I used to feel that way about kids who wore Nirvana shirts that they got from Hot Topic.
Totally. Like,
so I get it.
I remember seeing, like, yeah, like the kid, like, you know, I worked at a Hot Topic during the time when, like, My Chemical Romance and all that, like, screamo emo stuff was, like, really huge. And so all the kids were buying all that screamo trash. And I'd be like, here's your fucking receipt. Fuck off. You know, it's Hot Topic. And yeah. Every once in a while, we'd get, like, that Joy Division shirt. And this was before everybody used the fucking Joy Division shirt. It was, like, shocked me that the Soundwave, yeah, Joy Division shirt showed up at Hot Topic one day. I was like, holy shit, someone at corporate is fucking cool, I guess. And everyone, like, no one bought it. Like, of course I bought it. But no one bought it. And then, but every once in a while, some kid would come in and buy one, and I'd be like, nice. Like,
dude, there's just a slider. There's a slider of nostalgia. And it's like, whatever day it is now, go back exactly 25 years from that. And whoever was really into that stuff will buy it.
Right.
And then, you know, the calendar switches and you just move it up. And you could do the same thing kind of with 35 years back and so on and so forth.
The thing that sucks is that, like, you know, and this is about manufacturing now. Welcome back to the show. But, you know, it comes down to kind of like the interest, right? Like, sometimes companies will put out something and you're like, holy shit, I never thought I'd see, like, a, you know, like a Bill and Ted box set that looks like the phone booth. You know, like, I remember, like, being kind of in the minority for liking Bill and Ted in my world as growing up. And, you know, most people liked it, but, you know, it was like nobody talked about it or watched it over and over again.
Yeah. You know? I went out for Halloween once as, which one was Keanu Reeves?
Ted. Yeah.
And, you know, I had the wristband with the watch in it.
Yeah.
And I had a guitar, and I had to explain to everyone who I was. There was
like, hey, Axl Rose.
Yeah. Well, no, they'd be like, whoa, a rock and roll guy.
Whoa, are you, like, a roadie?
Fuck your face, I'm fucking Ted S. Preston Esquire.
Yeah. Dude, like, it's funny because I always loved Bill and Ted, and I've always loved time travel things, and then I've always loved Bill and Ted for being, it's so, man, I have so much to say about Bill and Ted, and we are also, like, in the middle of a Bill and Ted kind of thing. That yeah, is
we'll
like,
do that after the Beatles, then.
We'll do it after the Beatles, but, well, oh yeah, let's do a Bill and Ted thing after the Beatles. That's a great idea. All right, anyway.
All right.
Bill and Ted are great, and I just love how they're, like, they're so sweet, and they're just stupid, but they mean well, and they got big hearts, and that's, like,
yeah,
really great. That transcends anything. But yeah, I remember being, like, a kid and going, like, man, I never thought I'd see the box set of that, like, in a phone booth that I could have on my shelf as an adult collector. And I'm just thankful for, like, but they took a chance making that because they, you know, and they probably didn't make a ton of money off of it. So, like, you know, sometimes you just kind of have to hope that, like, some company thinks something you love is cool. They'll put it out for, like, a little bit. No one will buy it because you're the only one that likes it. And then, you know, and then you got that special thing. Kind of like when we put out our DB merch.
Yeah.
It's like,
dude, we're thinking about putting out a vinyl record, and Byron is very excited to, like, help us do that. We want to get a lot of our favorite bits together and put them on a vinyl record, because I just think that would be the funniest and most, like, over like most extra thing we could possibly do. But if you like the song, if you like the show, I think that would be a cool thing to have. So we're trying to gauge interest because it's going to be so expensive to even make, and we definitely won't make any money off of it. But it's almost like the coolness factor outweighs how much money we won't make off of it.
But it's cool because, like, when we were kids, like, dude, and then when we were teens collecting records and shit, like, you would shuffle through and you'd be like, whoa, Steve Martin has a record? Or like, whoa, Cheech and Chong have a record? That's cool. Uh-huh. I, you know, in some degree, it's kind of like an homage to that. Like, your comedy, people that you liked in the comedy world might put out an album of their greatest hits and it's just them doing stand-up or something, you know? And that shit's cool.
Yeah, I had George Carlin records, Richard Pryor, all the ones that you said. My dad was a huge Steve Martin fan. It was always nice. It's a different experience sitting there. It's like listening to someone tell you a story in your living room.
Right.
And I know that podcasts are always like that, but podcasts, it's like, I don't know, records are so much more of a process. You have to like get up and turn them over, you know, in a half an hour or 15 minutes or whatever it is.
Right.
And there's that like very warm sound that they have. It's just different and it's nice. And I know like when I first moved here, it was very comforting to collect records and stuff like that. And it gave me something to do and something to look forward to every week. And so that would be nice.
I've always liked in like movies about the 50s and 60s and even the 70s and into the 80s and even the 90s and the 2000s even. But that's not the point. The point is I love
naming every year.
Every year.
Every year had something good. 1985, 2006 had
pick
one.
Pick a year. But like, I loved seeing like the family like listening to a record while they're all doing stuff, like, you know, or like, you know, the cool dad is chilling by the fire with his gin and or like his whiskey while he reads the newspaper and the record's going. And so like, I like to put on a record when I'm like cleaning or something, or like when I'm cooking or doing something kind of like that. Cause you know, especially with cooking, it's like an organic process. So it's like you pick up the record, you like touch it, and you don't do that with your Spotify's, kids. You can't touch a Spotify.
You can't for a second, but it feels like everything else you touch. Thank you. Yeah. People got to hear a little truth every now and then.
All right. So Mike, on the last podcast, we ended on still the early days of the Beatles, talking about the Beatles career. And you were going to go on about something, I can't remember, but what year are we currently in with Beatles?
Right now we're in 1964. Everything we've talked about so far was the Beatles in England. We talked about how they formed from John Skiffle Band, who introduced Who to Who, so on and so forth. Pete Best playing terrible drums, eventually getting kicked out, replaced with Ringo. And then, so the boys start writing these songs and they're immensely popular in England.
Right.
And I don't know how it happens, probably through the magic of Brian Epstein, their manager.
Right.
Who was instrumental in getting the Beatles from just like a really good band to like a legitimately world famous band. He was all the business part of that. Somehow without the internet, sound travels across the ocean to America.
I don't ask us to explain it.
I truly don't know how it works.
We don't know. Sorry.
Again, there was no Spotify, so I think it is still a mystery. I think there was a hurricane in the middle of the Atlantic, and it carried some sound from England all the way to California.
Right. Someone just so happened to be listening to the ocean one day, and they're like, hey, hang on a minute. That sounds pretty catchy. And then
somebody had a shell up to their ear.
Yeah. And then someone came out with like a big recording device and was recording the sound coming from England, and that's how the Beatles got to the US.
Yes. Which is the same way we get sound to aliens, and
correct,
fingers crossed.
Correct. Fingers fucking crossed.
So they got a bunch of hits in England and they haven't yet made it over here. And as everybody knows, 1964-ish, they come over to the United States and they play on the Ed Sullivan Show, and that's a fucking huge deal.
That's like the moment, the turning point for them, I feel like.
Yeah. And every celebrity they, you know, they interview Whoopi Goldberg and Eddie Izzard and like all of these famous people in this documentary, this 8 days a week documentary. And they're all like, my first exposure to the Beatles, like your mom said, was sitting around with their family watching the program that the whole family would watch. And in this case, it was the Ed Sullivan Show. Little fun fact about Ed Sullivan, he sounds like he's doing safety instructions at Disneyland at all times.
And not only that, I've seen so many fake Ed Sullivans. Because whenever you see a Beatles thing, someone always recreates the fucking Ed Sullivan Show thing. Or Ed Sullivan Show was such a huge fucking show at the time, which was, for those of you that are like, what the fuck is that? It was essentially like Conan O'Brien or like Jay Leno.
Yeah, or like David Letterman.
Yeah. And so he, but I've seen so many impersonators of Ed Sullivan that when you see the real Ed Sullivan, you're like, I don't even know if that's the real Ed Sullivan.
Right. I thought that was Rod Sterling.
Right, exactly.
Hello, it's crazy how... this is the Beatles.
Okay. Calm down, kids. Calm down. Here we go. It's the Beatles.
Okay. Everyone, get ready to change your underpants. We got four lads from across the pond.
He also seemed to kind of hate children. You know, he had that vibe because the kids get all crazy because it's the Beatles. And but this was still before it's like manic to them. People.
This is like everyone. So it's funny how everybody watches this show to just like they just tell you what's popular in entertainment. You know, it's like now you hear stuff. You see a TikTok thing that blows up and you're like, what the fuck is that?
Now you see it and now you don't.
Now you see it, you don't sometimes. But things can become popular and part of the zeitgeist and popular culture for so many different reasons. But back then, since there were so few outlets, it's like you heard stuff on the radio and either you liked it or you didn't.
Right.
Or you saw them on this show where Ed Sullivan was straight up like, this is the most popular thing in the world right now. This is the new thing that you're going to like for a bunch of years.
Because it was like, how are we going to get this to the most possible people? And at the time, it was like either radio or TV. You could do a movie, but you had to build up to that, which I hope, which we're going to get to in 1967, I think.
Oh, but, absolutely. And I think even before that.
Yeah.
Because Hard Day's Night was the first one. And that came out kind of during this like British invasion of America things. Mm-hmm. And there were, you know, there were other bands. I'm going to screw this up because I didn't look it up, but there were other bands also coming from, you know, that area of the world that I think came in either around the same time or right after once the Beatles kind of kicked the door open. And we'll get into all that.
Right.
But so they play this show. And my favorite thing about watching all the footage of them coming to America is that people losing their goddamn minds. They would scream and play loud, fast music. And people would lose their goddamn minds.
Yeah.
So like, we got like, sent.
And there isn't even anything like particularly like titillating occurring in the moment. Like there isn't like, it's not like they're saying what? Like, I'm going to kiss you right now. Like, and they're telling people like, they're just singing these words and every word is like, they're giving everyone orgasms. Like, it doesn't matter what the word is or what they're even doing. It's just that people are just fucking going nuts for these guys.
Well, I disagree with that to a certain extent because all of the music was about, like, boy-girl relationships. And they're singing to teenagers who are, like, coming into their own and feeling their hormones and shit.
Right.
And it was, like, this mixture of music that they had never seen, like
right
four white dudes play, really. They'd never seen English people
British
play
boys,
it. So there was so much like new and exciting about it. It was a blend of all these bits of music that people like Chuck Berry music and Elvis music, but now there's like four young boys doing it.
And it didn't hurt that they were not bad to look at.
Right. Except for Ringo, arguably. But sometimes when you're that unique looking, you stick out because you're not as cute as the other ones. Right. And that becomes your thing.
Right. Yeah. Man, poor Ringo, you know?
Poor Ringo, dude.
Poor Ringo. Nobody should say poor Ringo.
No, poor Ringo. Ringo hasn't been poor since, what is it, 1962, probably.
Right. One more thing I wanted to say about the Ed Sullivan show, because I feel like we're kind of done with that part, right? Like, we're just moving on, like we're trucking.
Not yet. I wanted to have you play. Someone pulled a clip for us.
Right.
Which is like when the plane lands in America, and Ringo has this nice conversation in this documentary about how like they felt so welcomed that it was almost like they felt like the crowd was like, or New York was like drawing them in from the plane. Even before they landed the plane, they felt like very welcome. They couldn't wait to get off. And then as they're descending, you know, all the camera crews and all the news outlets, they hear about this British invasion. So they're all there to catch like the Beatles' first steps on American soil.
Right.
And someone sent me this clip. I think their name is in the email, of the newscasters just losing it.
Jeff Simpson.
Jeff, thank you so much for this. I've watched this two times, and I definitely wouldn't have even registered if you didn't send this to me, but it's too good to not address head on.
Brett registered?
Brett registered to me.
Okay, let me get the volume good and ready here. Okay.
So this is them coming off the plane and the newscasters absolutely losing their mind.
Okay. Wow, he is going nuts.
Look at him wiggle. Look at him wiggle.
Like a sportscaster talking about a ball going into a thing.
Yeah.
Look at it go. Look at it go. Look at it go.
The ball's in the thing. The ball's in the thing.
It looks like he's, oh, fuck. Hand in the pocket. Hand in the pocket. Hand in the pocket.
Look at his hair. It's on top of his head. And the wind's blowing it around. And the wind's blowing it around.
Oh, look out, his eye. One blink. Two blink. Three blinks.
We have someone at the studio counting the blinks.
Well, we had on the blinks, Tony. All right, let's listen to this next clip.
I got something in my head, you know, and all the walls of Rome couldn't stop me. You're right, pickled onion.
Then we went out to help.
Oh, these are just his favorite clips. These are just now favorite quotes from the show, from the documentary. Oh,
okay, so this is skipping around a little bit.
Yeah. Should we listen to these really quick? Let's listen to these.
You can, sure.
Okay, so these are favorite quotes from the documentary Mike's talking about, Hard Day. What's it called?
I mean, let's just keep it. We're very, like, on topic right now, so okay, let's just keep it like this.
All right.
So they come down and they immediately start showing their personality to a hungry American public in the form of interviews with American journalists.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, there's probably some of this in the clip. We should probably listen to the clip. But they just fuck with journalists at all times. Like John, especially.
Yeah.
Like, they're all like cheeky and witty and stuff. And even Eddie Izzard, who is an absolutely perfect, amazing British comedian, talks about dealing with hecklers and how you win and how you gain the respect from the audience is like you say the first thing that comes to your mind. It's usually the funniest thing.
Right.
And they're being like this very casually with like every American reporter. There's this one clip of like John, he gets interviewed by this guy, and this guy clearly isn't like familiar.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about.
And so like you could tell they're getting ready to record or go live or whatever. It's like, okay, what was your name again? And instantly John goes, Eric. It's okay, Eric. Two, three, and we're on. We're here with Eric, and John goes, it's John. It's always been John. And just like, you know, this guy blows it and you never hear from this reporter ever again. Probably got fired.
But the thing is like, imagine at this point in their lives, they're not like necessarily untouchable yet. Like they are exploding. It's the British invasion in the US at this point. But the U.S., it's like the U.S., it's their first exposure to them, right? So it'd be the equivalent of like some news guy going up to like Kesha or something, or like Kanye, and going like, Kanye, or like what, or like, you know, how do you say your name, sir, or whatever.
Here we have K.A. dollar sign Sasha, and she has a new song about getting drunk with a mom. K.A. dollar sign Sasha.
This is Lee Kim.
Lily Kim. Here we have an exclusive interview with Small Kim. She took home several BET awards. Kim.
Yeah. So like but obviously that guy probably felt like an idiot forever after that, because
he's dead now. You know.
Yeah. And good, because we don't need him here to screw shit up anymore. But that could have been like the first Adele Dazeem.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? It's like I read these articles where they didn't really, they blew up in their home country first, you know, and yeah. You have to expand to take over the world and to, you know, be rich and everything, have your music heard by the most number of people, especially when things like the internet don't exist. Mm-hmm. And they knew that the internet didn't exist. So they knew they had to get out there.
Right.
But they didn't really care about their perception in America at all. So I think when people come over here for the first time, or, you know, you see it when like an actor or an entertainer is super nervous on like a Tonight Show or something like that, I'm sure they were very excited, but I never got the impression with all the stuff that I watched, like they're very relaxed and they're very like witty and quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, they're never like, oh, if I flub this interview, it's over. They don't care. 'Cause there's already like soccer stadiums of people singing their lyrics, you know, during football matches. They don't give a shit what this television reporter thinks of
them. And they don't need to, and like, man, they were so brilliant at being like very, yeah, like everything just rolled right off their shoulders, essentially. And they kept that wit throughout their entire career. Like, and they really kept that like kind of fucking with everybody kind of like demeanor. And I think that's like really awesome. Cause we were talking about before we started rolling about George Harrison and the guy that like broke into his house when he was way older, like a few years before he died. And the guy broke into his house and stabbed him. And then he like made a joke to the press about like his band that like someone had just left or whatever. And it's like, dude was like old and got stabbed and he was still making jokes like to the press. And I think that's just like awesome. I've always loved that about them.
Well, if you think about it, dude, they had so much attention on them.
Yeah.
By like fucking 1966, 67, they're doing like Help and Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
And they're sick of like photo shoots and interviews with the press by then.
Right.
You know, and the press is like, especially to them, like they were never let alone ever. And at first it was very exciting, but I would imagine that it wears on, you know, your entire self as a person pretty quickly after that. So it was like half witty, super excited to be here, Christmas morning, Beatles times, you know?
Right.
And probably half like, I don't give a fuck if this interview ends in 2 seconds, because we're going to be the Beatles whether or not, no matter how we show up in your paper or on your news broadcast, you know?
Right.
And they
right.
were drinking a lot, and they did have like, this is the like Fab Four era of the Beatles,
right,
where so many like to remember them fondly as like, they're just cute guys in suits, but right. like some of them are married and their marriages are being suppressed. They're drinking a lot. They're like being right. straight up dicks to the press.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's very funny.
Yeah. Most of the time it's funny.
Right. But it's also like they're being presented as like pop stars, you know?
Right.
And they have this very clean image where, you know, thanks to Brian Epstein, they're wearing these suits everywhere. So they must be nice young lads and they have right. a very proper accent.
Yeah. They had a great like image. Like they it's just, everything was so picture perfect for these guys. Like literally, like they just, there weren't any missteps, you know, until like,
that's
you know,
what happens when you have yeah. a smart, rich, gay guy being like, dress like this, chaps, dress all posh.
A posh, rich, gay guy.
Because before they hooked up with him, they were like, what I would imagine like a stand-up comedian would be like now the equivalent is like t-shirt and shitty jeans or like a hoodie that's clearly been washed like 1,000 times.
right.
You know, they were like leather jackets and t-shirts and they kind of like dressed shitty on stage. And they were like, you know, you could look like every other band,
right,
being sweaty in your leather jacket, or you right. could have these like 5 custom made suits and boots and look exactly like everybody else.
Right. Know? Right. Yeah. I mean, everything fell so perfectly into place with them. And if it hadn't, I don't think we'd be talking about them, you know, no, it's just, you can't replicate any of this. Like it was just like a snapshot of those exact moments in time, which makes it mm-hmm. so much more fascinating and studyable, you know, or like researchable. Cause you're just like, yeah. where is this magic coming from? And what was it like when they were touring and what was it like when things got tough for them? Like, and what were their personal relationships like? And it's just like, so interesting. It's just forever interesting.
Yeah. So at this point they're, you know, I think one of the things that contributed to people latching on and them becoming people's favorites instantly is like we've been saying, like they knew who they were before they even came over here. You right. know, they're not like finding themselves in the eye of the press. They're coming over here and they're responding to questions exactly how they would for the voice of their personality. So you right. can look at these 4 guys and be like, that one's like that, that one's like that, that one's like that, and that one's like that.
Right.
I'm like this one, that one's my favorite. When they all get together, they make my favorite music.
Right.
And there's like instantly, you don't really have to learn about them because they're through how they act and through how they interact with these people, like being so funny. You tell somebody a lot about your personality with the way you joke around and
yeah.
you know, like I have this quote from George when they're always asking about their haircuts. There's always like, yeah. how did you get that haircut?
Right.
Because everyone in the 60s kind of has the same like Lego guy hair, you know?
right.
And then John is and like his shit is like combed a different way. And they're like, how did you make your hair go?
Yeah.
Like
what
that?
How does hair?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and so that's considered like so how does your and next question just for the hair.
there was a clip in some documentary, it might have been this one that we've been talking about, but someone goes like, do you plan on getting a haircut or something? Like some American, like, you know, some blue collar. When are you gonna, do you plan on getting a haircut, hippies? And then like one of them's like, no. Or they all go together like, no. And then one of them's like, as a matter of fact, George got his haircut last night or so.
Yeah, George says it.
Yeah, yeah.
George goes, I got mine cut yesterday.
Yeah, and it still looks like, you know, their hairstyle or whatever. Yeah. Everyone yeah. just starts laughing because it's like, they don't give a fuck, dude. They're just there yeah. to like, you guys need to accept us. We're not going to change for you guys.
Look how good yeah. we've already become. Now now you get to watch us be as good as we were right. over there in front of you.
Right.
So one of the celebrities that they interview is Whoopi Goldberg. And Whoopi Goldberg talks about how, you know, her and her family watched them on the Ed Sullivan Show. Mm-hmm. And like, she saw them. And because so many things were so drastically different than what they were used to in the pop culture eye, she's like, I looked at the Beatles. I didn't even see them as like 4 white dudes. I just saw them as an excuse to like something different.
Right.
And then that leads everybody, like me and you talking about Nirvana or fucking Joy Division or whatever. It's like, as soon as you know that you could like something coming into your teenage years, a little left of center like that, you're like, what else could I do that's different? And then you right. start to shape your personality. And I think the Beatles were that for that entire generation.
It, they it allowed like,
they
people,
look different.
Yeah.
Yeah. They look different. They sound different. They, you know, no other band dresses like this, whatever. And that's, they start to find their identity as a teenager in them.
Before we move on, we should jump into the ads.
Okay.
And, Mike, do you have something special planned for us or?
Thank you for teeing me up. I just want to see if this works, if I could do the ad from now on, because we've been giving too much money to those goddamn royalty-free sites.
Yeah, at this point, we should just sign up for one. That,
that just yes, I think that'd be smart.
That we could just use. But hey, I think this is even better than any of that. Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you the ad portion of Dynamic Banter featuring the musical stylings of Mr. Michael Falzone.
You hear that?
Yes. Hey guys, have you heard of Liquid IV? If you haven't, I know that it's kind of an interesting name. It makes you think, what is this going into my blood? What do we got stuff going into my blood? Well, kind of, but not in the way you think. Guys, Liquid IV is just... Man, how do I explain it? Basically, one stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water, it's like a powder, gives you 2 to 3 times the amount of hydration as plain water. And man, during these times when it's hard to focus on yourself and realize that you have to be drinking lots and lots and lots of water because it's very healthy and it's good for you, I forget a lot. And what ends up happening is I feel really not great, dehydrated and tired. And then I realize I haven't been drinking enough water. And so when we got our first shipment of Liquid IV to test on the show, I was like, okay, I like the idea of something that's like ultra hydrating that I can just like put into my water, drink, and then it's like, boom, I just had like 2 to 3 times the amount of hydration. And I'm like, this is what I need because I forget about drinking normal water. And so I tried it and it's delicious and it tastes so, I don't know, there's just something about the taste and then the way you feel afterwards. You're truly giving yourself the gift of delicious electrolytes and vitamins and potassium. As a matter of fact, more vitamin C than an orange and as much potassium as a banana. And it's healthier than sugary sports drinks. There's no artificial flavors or preservatives, and there's less sugar than an apple. So it's not like this super sweet thing that you shouldn't drink all the time because this or that. It's actually really good stuff, really helpful, help fight off all the dumb things that happen with dehydration. And guys, what makes Liquid IV so effective? Well, it's the cellular transport technology. Ready for this? The optimal ratio of glucose, sodium, and potassium delivers water and nutrients into the bloodstream. It's the perfect balance to help you hydrate more quickly and effectively than water alone. And like I said before, one stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water can give you as much hydration as 2 to 3 bottles of plain water. I mean, it's a no-brainer, guys, but don't take our word for it. If you want to taste some of the delicious flavors they have, like strawberry or, you know, I think there's like a lime and all those. I don't know. There's a bunch of flavors. Just go to, they're at Costco. If you have Costco membership, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code BANTER at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use the promo code BANTER at liquidiv.com. Hey, get better hydration today at liquidiv.com.
Beautiful scene.
Dude, you're beautiful. Are you kidding me? I felt like I was in a AT&T commercial or something.
Close.
Why don't we guess? Are you planning a little drum session there, or is that like, ooh, that's what I'm talking about? Because you
is
know
that
what,
really
Mike?
Loud?
No, it sounds great. Because I'm feeling like getting my body working a little. So maybe I got a little something that makes me want to move and get up and do a little workout, maybe. Maybe those of you listening and you're sitting on your couch or at your desk or something, maybe you can get up and just start moving to the beat, baby. Move your leg, move your leg, move your little baby leg, Move that leg, move your leg, move your little baby. Guys, let's talk about Crossrope. Speaking of moving your body a little bit, it's the perfect time to jumpstart your new year fitness goals. Come on, guys. You know, let's just like work on ourselves. Okay? It's January. And it gives us a fresh start to achieve our fitness goals. You can get Crossrope and jump in with both feet. With limited fitness options right now, guys, Crossrope offers a fun workout you can do at home. It's just 30 minutes with Crossrope's patented weighted jump rope system that gets you an intense cardio workout with the added benefits of full body resistance training. Guys, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm stagnant during this thing. I'm sitting on couches and desk chairs, and I'm writing and working and streaming and podcasting and doing all the things that you do while sitting your darn butt down on a seat. But I'll tell you what Crossrope does. Crossrope gives me a chance to do a little nice cardio workout, something really good for my body, indoors, or at the park or something, you know? That's the best thing about jump ropes. They're portable. They you know, you can fit them anywhere you can fit a jump rope. Think about a jump rope really quick. Now think about storing that. That's what you can do with Crossrope. Right, Mike?
You can store it if you want.
You can store it.
And that's up to you.
Guys, you can get a full body workout you can do anywhere, even at home, with Crossrope. And they've got those patented weighted jump rope system, which is it's a calorie. Oh, and there's a calorie burning cardio workout with full body resistance training for a complete workout in just 30 minutes. And there's an app where you can track all your progress. And there's just a bunch of cool stuff, guys. So why don't you jumpstart your 2021 fitness journey with Crossrope for a limited time. Save $50 on Crossrope's most popular jump rope fitness bundle at crossrope.com/banter. That's $50 off a Get Fit bundle at crossrope.com/banter. It's been. Hey guys, one more ad. How about that? And then we'll move on. Ooh, we're dropping the D, guys. Buckle up. Hey guys, you heard of HelloFresh? What is HelloFresh? Well, HelloFresh gets you fresh, pre-measured ingredients, and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. And that's why it's America's number one meal kit, guys. HelloFresh cuts out stressful meal planning and grocery store trips so that you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in about 30 minutes or less. And HelloFresh offers 23 plus recipes each week, featuring a range of flavors, cuisines, and ingredients so you'll never get bored. And eating healthier has never been easier. With low-cal, carb-smart, vegetarian, and pescatarian options every week. And no matter what you choose, every single recipe is packed with fresh produce sourced directly from farmers. And hey, why don't you cut down on those grocery bills, Johnny? And food waste, Sally. HelloFresh delivers pre-portioned ingredients so you're not overbuying, which is a burden on the planet, guys, and your wallet. But more importantly, on the planet. You heard of that, Mike? Guys, I've done HelloFresh myself. I've used all their fresh ingredients. Everything's so easy to do. The recipes are easy to follow. It makes anybody feel like a world-class chef. And, man, it's so nice to be served a meal that you made yourself. Everybody loves to be made. Like, when someone makes food, there's just more love put into it. More of a personal experience for you and a loved one and your family. So, guys, I don't have to keep talking about how great HelloFresh is, because you will find out yourself if you go to HelloFresh.com/10Banter. That's right, HelloFresh.com/10Banter. And why is that? Because when you use the code 10Banter as well, you get 10 free meals, including free shipping, guys. 10 free meals, all right? That's right. At HelloFresh.com/10Banter and the offer code 10Banter, you get 10 free meals, including free shipping. Guys, come on. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. And find out why yourself. Thanks, HelloFresh. Wow, Mike, that was great. What a wonderful accompaniment. Yeah, that's it. We did it.
Great. Great job, Steve.
Great job, Mike.
Good job, us.
Hooray us and hooray for everything. Hooray for everyone.
Hooray for everyone and everything. Dude, couple more things about 1964.
Yeah.
And then we'll just move on. Still be in 1964, 1965 next time, because I want to hear what people have to say by this point.
I've got a lot to say about 1967.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get there eventually.
We'll get there. And not only this, we have your Beatles History Roads. I saw.
Yeah.
I peeked in the old email box, and you guys sent in quite a few Beatles History Roads. So I'm very excited to get to some of those. And also,
I really want to get to that.
Really, really quickly, if somebody out there is listening to this with musical abilities of some sort, I think it would be really cool if someone made a Beatles History Road, like some kind of like mashup that we could play for the Beatles History Road edition of History Road. So if there's somebody out there with musical know-how, and even if we don't end up using yours as the one, we'll play every single one you send to us. Because I'm sure
the
that'll be fun.
The long in history roads.
That's great. I love that. Yeah, if someone wants to have some fun with it. But, you know, within the means of us not getting in trouble because of copyrighted Beatles songs. But,
right.
Yeah, if you want to have some fun with, like, a very short clip or some kind of weird Beatles-y history road, we'd love that. Anyway, sorry, Mike. Continue.
No, not at all. Those were all great points. The impression, especially after watching this again last night, the impression that I got of, you know, this is still very much John's band, but him and Paul are just like straight up fucking machines writing a song,
right.
Bless you, in the morning.
Thank you.
And Paul was played guitar and he was left-handed, and John played guitar, so he was right-handed. So they said teaching each other songs was like super easy, and they would be, you know, they would come up with a really catchy song. They'd be able to teach it to each other real easy because it was like playing in a mirror. And then they said that the lyrics, like, just straight up weren't really of substance back then. They were just like, you love the girl, you can't get the girl, they're in love, we're in love. And if you look back, I was gonna have us do a thing where we analyze Beatles lyrics, but it would just be boring as fuck, because it was like, okay, love me do, I love you, please love
be
me
true.
Do.
I'll, oh, okay. Oh, what about true? I'll always be
shut
true.
Shut up, George! They hit him.
Fuck off, George!
Fuck off, George!
Ain't nothing in your head, George, but coconuts.
George is like saying all these profound things. What if you rhymed love me do?
I always, the way I understand... Fuck you, George! The way I understood it about George was, or the thing I understood about George was, he kind of was just along for the ride, was very good at guitar, and then when he started to, like, try to contribute music, they were all like, nah. No, we don't like it.
Yeah.
And then
they would give him and Ringo like one song because they had to.
Right. But they were considered similar in the sense that they weren't good songwriters. And the songs they brought to the table didn't necessarily excite John or Paul at all.
Yeah.
And so they would just kind of be like, they'd feel like left out a little bit. And then fucking George writes Here Comes the Sun. And it's like, you know, and then it's like, holy shit, why haven't they been letting this guy write more music? But the way I understood it was, is that like, you know, his input wasn't appreciated. So us going like, fuck you, George, is probably not too far off from how they treated him.
I'm like, sure he was also like happy just to like, dude, it's very funny because he had this one song, I think it was on Hard Day's Night, where it's like, I'm happy just to dance with you. And that is kind of like a very George thing. John's like, I want to fuck your hand or whatever. And Paul's like, here's your hand. We all look like this and we're alone, aren't we? And then George is like, I'm happy just to be here.
Why don't you get your hand ding, 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 and put it in like this? Then I'll get close to that hand. And then I'll fuck your hand. I'm gonna fuck your hand.
Like, George is like, maybe hold the hand.
Isn't that just a hand job? Shut up, Ringo! Fuck you!
Dude, so they talk about, they called it a handy.
I think
they call it a manual. So they're like writing all these hit songs on the road and in hotel rooms. And they have all these like, you know, the archival footage of them answering phone calls and just like jerking around in hotel rooms. And
the fan mail, the big bag of fan mail. Yeah,
the fan mail. And there's one clip where I don't know if they did it like afterward. What is the additional sound recording in movies? What is that called?
ADR? Oh, ADR or VO. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that or if it was like legit, just like serendipitous, whatever. I'd like to think Ron Howard put it in there on purpose because it's fucking awesome. But there's this one clip of them all kind of jerking around in the hotel room and like, you know, with a guitar or with like a random instrument that they have. And John has one of those keyboards that you blow into.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does this riff that sounds like the beginning of Strawberry Fields.
Whoa.
And this is like 4 or 5 years before that would happen. And it's so fucking cool. If you want to go watch it, it's at like around the 31 minute mark. Damn,
that's so rad. Dude, I fucking love it. I mean, talking about the Beatles makes me love the Beatles even more.
Like, yeah, oh yeah, man.
Did you ever see Love at in Vegas, the Cirque du Soleil show?
No.
Man, I really hope that all comes back someday because that show was incredible. And it was the music was the first time that they were able to actually go back to the original Beatles recordings and were allowed to like break them apart and remix them and like take out background sounds and bring their vocals up. And like basically it was the first time they were allowed to remix the Beatles. And so that Love album just on its own is fucking phenomenal. It's like,
I had that. I've never seen the show ever, but I had that. It was like a 2-disc thing.
Oh yeah. It's incredible. I highly recommend if you're listening to this and you've never heard Love, like get your favorite libation and turn off all the lights, put on a good pair of headphones and just listen to it from beginning to end. It's just a beautiful experience, but there's a moment where you hear there's a Strawberry Fields remix or whatever in it where it starts with the synth, just the doon, 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 just the thing you were talking about that he was playing on the harpsichord or whatever the fuck it is. But man, it's just, they're so good, man. They just knew, they just like had music in their hearts and their souls, and they would just make it with their fucking hands and mouths. And it's just like incredible, transcendent shit.
Yeah. It's very nice.
Like, I'm a simp for the Beatles, dude.
Hell yeah, man. I think
hardcore.
A lot of people, I don't think we're alone in that at all. But I think there was a really cool, we kind of touched on it before, but there was a really cool cut in the documentary where they talk about, you know, they show you kind of how big they were from going from an interview where they talk about how the Beatles don't really care too much about football. Like they don't have a favorite soccer team or anything. Right. And then they cut to an arena, a football stadium of people like soccer hooligans that are just like moving in a wave of people singing "She Loves You." So,
oh yeah,
by the end of 1960, isn't that crazy to be like, that's like if me and you fucking were like, yeah, we don't really watch football. And then everyone in Giant Stadium in North Rutherford, New Jersey is like, you know, fucking singing the Chicken Bake song or some shit like that.
Yeah. Or they've got History Road signs up. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. History Road. History Road.
Yeah. Damn, that's bonkers.
That would never happen. By the end of 1964, for the first time, what'd you say?
I said it's interesting to think about, Mike.
It is interesting to think about. Thank you. That's a great point.
Thank you.
Thank you for interrupting me with that.
Please.
Dude, I just wanted to say, this is something I didn't catch the first two times through either. By the end of 1964, they have the top five records of the year. All top. It's the only time in history where the top five spots were all the same
artist
from the same artist.
Damn.
Do you think you can name the five songs?
Oh,
in 1964.
I bet. Oh, of the Beatles. In 1964.
Yeah. Think about like very early shaking their heads around Beatles.
Yeah. Is there like Girls or something? Is Girls in there?
It's just called Girls.
Or Boys. Is Boys in there?
No.
Okay.
You're thinking of the most popular early Beatles songs of all time and you say Girls and Boys.
No, you said 64.
64. These are like the height of like Beatlemania.
But they hadn't written like Strawberry Fields or anything yet.
No, that's like 68.
Yeah.
67.
Yeah. So it's like I Want to Hold Your Hand and stuff like that.
Yeah, I Want to Hold Your Hand is one of them.
Yeah. But that's why I'm trying to think of the deeper ones that like I wouldn't expect to be.
These aren't even like deep. I'll just tell you what they are.
Oh, they're not deep cuts. Okay, yeah, go for it.
No, these are like the top popular songs in the USA.
Yeah.
It was number one was Can't Buy Me Love.
Yeah.
Number two was Twist and Shout.
Yeah.
Number three was She Loves You. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
She Loves You. Yeah, yeah. I'm tired of hearing it. She's an alcoholic. And then I Want to Hold Your Hand and then Please Please Me were the top.
Please Me. Yeah. There's a Beatles line in some Naked Gun or something with Leslie Nielsen in it where he's like talking to this woman and he's like breaking up with her or something. And he goes, to quote the Beatles, she loves you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, he's like, you don't love me. But, Please Please Me isn't even really that great of a song, if I could say so. Hot take.
It's all the same stuff. It's all like really catchy, really nice melodies. And then just like very simple, like, last night I said these words to my girl.
But also, what was the other one? Oh, Twist and Shout isn't even their song.
Right, but that was the point where they were like, you know, they would cover some. It's almost like the way fame works is you have to get really famous doing something that's very comfortable and easily ingestible for the most amount of people. So you have to do, they call it a nuanced take on the familiar. It's like you take the familiar and, you know, it's like how all these musicians got famous on YouTube for doing cover songs.
Right.
You know, and you take a familiar thing and you put your own twist on it. And they did a lot of cover songs when they first came over.
But isn't it interesting how, like, imagine huge artists of today, like imagine Justin Timberlake got famous, not like with the Backstreet Boys, because they covered songs. Like, it was just all cover songs.
There have been a lot of people who their first big song is like a cover of somebody else.
Yeah.
Like Alien Ant Farm did Smooth Criminal.
Smooth Criminal, yeah.
That guy, was it Jeffrey Gaines did that In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel?
Oh, I don't remember.
You know
that.
What I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. and Gary then, Jules, Mad World.
Oh yeah, that's perfect. Because like, what did that guy do?
Right, but we know his name, but we don't know anything else.
Right, exactly. Right,
but I can't think of too many artists that like started off covering, and then they're like their own music is like what is incredible about them. Not that they covered songs well, like it's like they ended up being amazing artists despite the fact that they used other people's music to kind of like, you know, rise up a little bit. It's very
well, what about
awesome.
Like Queen Irby, remember what was the fucking band? There in this generation now, there are a bunch of musicians who later came into their own right as like a singer-songwriter, but that started like straight up just covering songs on YouTube.
Yeah.
And so what the Beatles did was almost like a little bit more of a subtle version than that, because they would have like one, two of their songs. I think that's how you made like a single back then. It's like you did a cover and then the other side would be like one of your songs. So like you sneak your own stuff in there.
Isn't it funny how like when anybody else did that, it was like instantly people would tune out. Like you'd be playing like Layla or something, or you do like Don't Stop Believing or Wonderwall, and everyone's like, yeah. And then you're like, this one's called Kiss Me, I'm Alone. And then everyone's like, fuck this, man. Hey, let me get another drink. But it's like,
oh, it's the bathroom song. He's playing the bathroom
Exactly. But when the Beatles did it, it was like, oh shit, this is like good.
Yeah.
This is actually good. Yeah. You guys are good.
Well, if you really, really like the way the band plays the cover, you want to hear more from them. If you're listening to it because you just love the song, then you can go either way.
Right.
You know, but if you're listening to it because the band put such an interesting twist on it, then you want to hear more from that band. And eventually it's like, you know, like with being a stand-up, it's like you tell the audience about you, you tell them about your family, so they get who you are.
Right.
You know, if they walk through the door and you're just a stranger, dude, first 15 minutes is like telling them about you. And then once you have them, then you show them who you are as an artist. And, you know, I was watching this and I took a bunch of notes about how the YouTube algorithm and IG promote a lot of the same thing over and over again. And like the YouTube algorithm doesn't really know where to put you.
Right.
And how to show you to other people if you're doing a bunch of different things and taking a bunch of chances. But if you do the same thing over and over again, you'll at least get out to that many people that when you start to break away from that, you'll reach way less people. But hopefully by that point, you have an audience that cares about what you're doing and wants to hear more from you and wants you to change eventually.
Right.
So,
Mike, I'm going to grab some water really quick. Okay. I just realized I'm thirsty as garbage.
Yeah. And when you do, when you come back, we'll do the history roads.
That sounds great.
There's a bunch of cool parts in the documentary about how they talk about, they traveled with this very like straight laced photographer reporter for a little while, and they'd always fuck with him. And they talk about how dangerous it was to travel with the Beatles, especially for a loser photographer. They were just always in danger of getting trampled. And they show them going in and out of trains. If you've never seen the movie Hard Day's Night, the first couple scenes are just them running away from like hordes and hordes of screaming girls, basically. And I think that the, you know, they didn't have to fake that much at all. They just said, you know, you 100 girls, do you want to see the Beatles? And then they would just fucking run after them. And people really do that, dude. Me and Steve have been to VidCons where, you know, British YouTubers would come over for the first time. And all of a sudden, everyone at the first couple VidCons or the first couple Playlist Lives are screaming their fucking asses off and physically running after like little British YouTubers or little cute, you know, pop star American YouTubers.
Attractive and, like, people.
That kind of mania like really, really happens.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll end with, no, we could pick that up next time. We'll pick it up next time. I want to talk about how the Beatles came over, you know, 64, 65, it's kind of like the height of segregation. Mm-hmm. And they straight up wouldn't play to like segregated crowds.
Fuck yeah.
And they kind of very naturally like were, you know, one of the first groups speaking out against that.
Fuck yeah,
dude. They didn't make it their whole thing or whatever. But, you know, Whoopi Goldberg talks about, or there's a couple people who talk about going to a concert the first time. Dr. Kitty Oliver. The Beatles came to her town and it was, you know, she was talking about, she lived in Jacksonville, Florida, I guess. And like the only white person who came to her town before that was like a salesman who came there once a month. And that was like the white dude they knew.
Yeah.
And then like when the Beatles came, it was the first time they had fun in a massive group of people with like all different types of people.
And they included everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they
refused to play.
And they went everywhere. Like you, it's hard to imagine, but like during their touring years, like anybody could see the Beatles.
Uh-huh.
Like you could see them, like you could just go and pay the 2 cents or whatever the fuck it costs to like see them. You know, that's you know, a hyperbole.
Yeah. It was like between like $5 and $15, depending. Like right. I think but my uncle got a ticket.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were available. I mean, they played in stadiums and it was before fucking people played in stadiums. Like right. We'll talk about when they went to Shea Stadium and the speaker system was all shitty because they just weren't designed set to up for broadcast music right, over right. that. You know, they were now they were designed to be like batting next number eight.
Also, speaking of the covers, a Beatles live show. Have you ever listened to like a Beatles concert bootleg, Mike?
Not that I could remember. I had a bunch, but they weren't I had like the live at the BCC where they did their first like big, you know, they'd sit at the BCC for 3 hours and they play a lot of cover songs and things that influence yeah, them and stuff.
That's what it was. It was like mostly cover songs. And then they'd go like, I want to hold your hand and Please Please Me and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting to listen to that because it really is just kind of like, you know, this is before they had their like, you know, endless discography of music. So yeah. An early Beatles show is mostly covers, which is interesting. Anyway.
Dude, can I kick off the History Roads with this one real quick DM I got?
Yeah.
This guy, Sam Weaver, was like, hey, Mike, I got a kick out of this. I got a kick out of this after the Beatles DB. My grandpa played in a rival pub band to the Beatles in Hamburg in the 60s.
Whoa.
And were one of those ones that didn't make it so big. Ha ha. He told me so many stories about the red light district, 10-hour gigs, being fed speed by the club owners to keep the band awake, etc. Here's a club of them in their fancy outfit. Or here's a picture of them in their fancy outfits. And here's a picture of this dude's fucking grandfather in this fucking band with their cool guitars and their sweaty button-down shirts.
To Beatles. Look, they have a Beatles look.
Yeah. Dude, that's what happens, man. Somebody blows up and everyone takes a little bit from them because it seems to work. And then you shed your influences and you make it or you don't make it. But that was from Sam Weaver. So thank you very much, Sam.
All right. Well, let's jump into these dang history roads. That was a pre-history road from Sam. Thank you, Sam. Let's get in there.
I found out long ago. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It's a long way down the history.
Some of those buttons run for a while.
Michael Carlson. He can't help himself. Michael Carlson sends a short Beatles Hibbs-ry rogue saying, hi, boys. One time when I was 5, I saw a Beatles tribute band at a Six Flags type park. But I'm dumb and thought it was the actual Beatles until I was like 10 or 12 years old. Thanks, boys, Michael.
That's really great. How would you know, man? How would you know?
That, yeah, you were a kid. Damn. So you told all your friends you saw the Beatles?
I saw the Beatles. They were next to the water park, and I had a turkey leg, and I watched the Beatles. I saw them with my eyes.
Nick Toupin says, Beatles Christmas Miracle. Hello, Buzz 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 Beetle Baby Boys.
Ding.
My 60-year-old dad grew up a huge Beatles fan for years, from the time I started giving him gifts about 6 years old. Damn, that's cold.
What kind of job do you have at 6 years old?
That's a good point. I gave my dad a rock once for his birthday when I was a child.
Rock out.
For every birthday, Father's Day, and Christmas, every occasion, my two sisters and I got my dad a Beatles-themed gift. I'm talking shirts, mugs, posters, DVDs, CDs, etc.
Please. Steve drinking out of a Beatles mug.
Finally, one Christmas after opening the third Beatles-themed gift that day, he looked up from the 100th Beatles coffee table book he had received over the past few years and said, "You guys, I don't think I like the Beatles anymore. Please don't get me any more Beatles stuff." And that's how we crushed my dad's love for the Beatles. To this day, he really doesn't listen to their music anymore. Sorry, Dad. Maybe that's he just crazy. Doesn't like you guys.
Yeah, he probably doesn't like you guys. He probably doesn't want to be force-fed his own favorite thing because you guys can't have a conversation with him enough to see what else he might like.
Right. Yeah, he probably does resent, probably not the Beatles, but he might resent that, yeah, you guys didn't dig into what he wanted more in his life.
You know what's weird about not liking the Beatles at all, or claiming to not like the Beatles at all? Depending on when you listen to them, it's like four different bands.
Right.
Like the Beatles don't sound the same. You know, they change their sound like three or four different times.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And thank God.
They say that too. They talk about a lot when they first came over here. They're like, how long could this last? And like, when's the bubble going to burst type thing.
Right.
And I think they talk about that maybe it wouldn't have lasted as long if they didn't start to like change up their sound in their next couple albums and then onto the later 60s and stuff.
I mean, I the thing is like,
does he?
You know what I'm saying?
Sam Parkinson says, here's a Lee Short Beatles history road. Hi, boys. I'll save you from having to read an intro of DB gibberish. Just know that I'm a longtime fan. Thank you.
That's nice. That's like the next level of intro to a history round.
Right. And honestly, I respect that and appreciate it. it's funny when you guys do all the DB gibberish, but sometimes it's nice to be like, hey, you know, I'm not going to bore you with that shit.
Hey, imagine I did this, and here we go.
And I'm going to try to be funny. Here's the email. I'm emailing because I'm born and raised in Liverpool, home of the Beatles.
Heard of it?
Jackpot.
It's been...
And I live about 5 minutes from both Strawberry Fields, Penny Lane, and all the Beatles' childhood homes. Holy shit.
That's cool.
My bank, where I have to make any withdrawals, is actually the one on the corner mentioned in the Penny Lane lyrics. Whoa! Ooh.
I hope you got more than a penny in your account. Okay, well, I didn't mean for it to be offensive. Okay, thank you for coming with me. Oh, wow. I don't deserve that.
They love you, Mike. I love your impressions of the band members, although mine are most likely superior for obvious reasons. I don't get it. If you want any niche Beatles facts, have any questions, or even just want to hear a Liverpoolian accent, please call. Oh, it's a phone number.
You got $15 to make that call?
How about we ask you a question and you email us back?
Email us a sound back.
Sam, Mike, do you have a question for someone who lives so close to all that shit? Do you get sick of the tourists?
Why don't you host a walking tour? Learn as many things as you can, host a walking tour, open up business for yourself, and fucking make that money, player.
I bet there's a bunch of those already.
Yeah, but you can, anyone
yours could
can
be
do
better.
It.
Yours could have sounds.
It's been...
This is over here's where John Lennon bought a Slim Jim, and it's been a good time. With me to the next location.
Dude, that's Ozzy, like, not really remembering, but thinking that he's in the right neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. Over here is where maybe John...
And then if you go down, I'm almost positive that if... And then you take a...
All right, let's get out of here because I got to make a weird poop because it's coming out. So thank you, Mummy. You understand. Guys, this has been a great episode of this show. I'm really loving nerding out about the Beatles with my friend Mike Falzone. And I hope you're enjoying it as much as we are from some of your responses on Twitter and DMs and Instagram and emails and all those things. We are certainly seeing that you guys are enjoying it, and that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll kind of breeze through 1965 next time, 1966. We'll get to Shea Stadium times, talk about all that, and then go into like a Rubber Soul, Yesterday and Today, all that stuff.
We got a lot to talk about because last night I watched the Magical Mystery Tour, and dude, it's really bad.
We have to catch up to the later stuff because the later stuff is so – this stuff is very like this is fun to see how this popular music started, but all the crazy shit at the end is like the more dynamic banter.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to end this whole Beatles thing with a bang once we get to the good goods. But we're even thinking about some type of commentarium. I don't know if we've mentioned that yet, but Mike doesn't like it when I do that, but I want us to be held accountable.
As long as we do it, I have no problem with it.
Guys, thank you for listening. Michael, thank you for your time. I want to really quick, if I could, I don't want to put you on the spot, Mike, but Mike gave me this.
Yes.
Which is a super rad notebook that has Mike Falzone branded things on it, and it has a nice pen that says write everything down on it, which I think is really rad. And I think you make these, right, Mike?
Yeah, man.
You sell these or something?
It's like a pack of three notebooks, like Steve said. And if you like writing stuff down and if you want everything you need to do that, there's a little link on MikeFalzone.com and they're through DFTBA. And there's plenty of them. So if you want those, go get them. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, and thank you because I'm like certainly into this world of writing things down now, and I know that you're a big advocate for that, and it's a good habit to get into, and it's very helpful, so thank you, Mike, for
and there's a two are formatted for like lines, like to write words, and then there's a blank one if you like to, if you're a doodle bug.
I'm a little bit of a doodle bug, if I can say it.
You can, I'll allow it.
All right, guys, well, thanks for listening to the show, and fuck, man, I guess I just love you.
I love you. We all love.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.